The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast joining you here early December, and there is a lot to discuss. The Milwaukee Brewers undergoing a bit of a facelift. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. I'm joined on the other line by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Since we last chatted, Tom, a lot has happened. The Brewers made a big trade with the Padres, sending two major league players to San Diego. The Brewers learned that Mike Moustakas would not be back. He signed with the Cincinnati Reds on Monday, and then later on Monday, the non-waiver, or I should say the tender deadline, when teams could tender contracts for players that were not yet arbitration eligible, and a lot of familiar guys from last year will not be back, including Travis Shaw, Jimmy Nelson, Alex Claudio, Junior Guerra. Tom, first question, I'll just blanket this whole thing. What in the world is going on with the Milwaukee Brewers?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a roster that's been in flux, and, you know, quite honestly, way more subtractions than additions. But, you know, the Brewers, as David Stern said last night, and if you we have a story online on JS Online right now with his comments, they knew all along that not just Grandal and Moustakas, but also Drew Pomerantz were going to be highly coveted on the market. You know, to those players' benefit, or to those players' credit, more accurately, they went out and had tremendous years and made themselves valuable on the free agent market, and teams had a lot of interest in them. And so, you know, the Brewers, the way the Brewers operate is they assign values to players, and I give them credit for being disciplined and sticking to those values. They don't do a lot of impulsive shopping. They don't do a lot of knee-jerk reaction to other teams' offers. And sometimes that means losing players. But they did not see the benefit of doing long-term deals with players that were already in their 30s. And so they lost them. But they know they have to make up for these holes on their roster. Grandal is going to be tough because he's kind of a one-of-a-kind offensive catcher. You know, you don't really see many other switch-hitting catchers with powers from both sides who also are good catchers. And so he went out and killed it on the market, you know. He got the $18.25 million that the Brewers paid him for 1 year, but he got it for 4 years from the White Sox. So let's see how that works out. He's been used a lot. You know, the American League has the DH too, so it allowed them, the White Sox, to slide him into that role on occasion, which I think might save his body a little bit. And the Grandal, the Moustakas thing hurt mostly because he went to an NL Central opponent, and now the Brewers are going to have to deal with him 19 times a year for the next 4 years. So that one made that a little bit more painful, just the fact that, you know, the Brewers are going to have to face this guy so much. The non-tenders, I mean, can you really say any of them were stunning? We sort of knew that after the Shaw's meltdown that the Brewers probably weren't going to tender him. Jimmy Nelson just needs more time to come back from his shoulder surgery. And let's see if they try to revisit a lower deal with him. Guerra and Claudio had pitched a lot last year, but the Brewers, you know, just felt that that their projected salaries were going to be a bit high too. And let's face it, they're going to end up committing some pretty big money to Corey Knebel and Josh Hader, their two best relievers. So a lot of their savings is going to go away when it comes time to pay the piper with those two guys.
12 of the 25 guys who were on the opening day roster last year are gone. Two guys that started on the disabled list are also gone, including the entire infield, including pitcher-catcher, with the exception of Orlando Arcia. And we'll talk about him a little bit. Not clear what his role is going to be with this team yet either. I think, though, in general, if there is a concern that Brewers fans have after all these moves in summary, because I think most of them, like you said, not stunning. I know everybody would have liked Grandal back, but didn't seem likely the Brewers were going to bring him back. I know that they would have liked Drew Pomerantz back, but I'm sure everyone knew he was going to make more money than the Brewers wanted. Moustakas is maybe a little surprised, but he's not completely irreplaceable. But the one concern is now it looks like the Brewers are almost cutting payroll, because they've said goodbye to a lot of guys who have decent salaries, but certainly not bank-breaking salaries. Those, you know, guys like the middle relievers, like a Junior Guerra or an Alex Claudio. So in your understanding, I mean, that would seem crazy to me that the Brewers would be in that mode. They have Christian Yelich for a couple more years. I have to think they're not thinking in terms of pulling back after back-to-back playoff runs. But is there anything that you've seen or heard or understand that might indicate they are, in fact, reeling back this year?
Well, they don't ever treat their payroll like that. They don't set, under Mark Altanzio, they don't ever say, this is going to be our payroll for next year at the end of the season. They sort of treat it organically, and Altanzio likes to give Stern some room to make moves. You know, last year it looked like they were going to have a lower payroll, then all of a sudden they signed Grandal for $18.25 million in January, and then Moustakas for $10 million. And all of a sudden, they had their highest payroll ever, $125 million, and to which they added with some late-season acquisitions before the year was done. So will they go back and have $125 million payroll? I don't know. It might be lower than that, but that was their all-time high. But they'll assess each opportunity on its own value and then see where they are as they get towards spring training. That's just always the way they've done it. Altanzio believes in being flexible with the payroll and not just putting this set figure on it that Stearns is not allowed to exceed. Have they trimmed payroll so far? Yes. You know, as I've written, all of their moves, trades, non-tenders, and losses of free agents – they've trimmed some $63 million off their payroll. 10 plus will go back to Hader and Knievel and some of their own people also. But it does allow some flexibility to go do something. You know, they have to find a catcher, a first baseman, and a third baseman. So they're going to have to spend some money to do it. And they also need some starting pitching. So let's just wait and see. It's been subtraction, mostly subtraction so far. But now there's going to have to be addition. They have 9 openings on their 40-man roster, JR. I guarantee you they're not going to open the season next year with 31 players on their 40-man roster.
No.
You know, they're going to have 40 players on their 40-man roster, not 31. So they've got 9 openings. That's the most he's had at this stage of the offseason for a while. And I don't think they're going to make 9 picks in the Rule 5 draft either, if people are wondering about that.
Yeah, I don't think teams that make back-to-back playoff runs are taking on 9 Rule 5 cases for the following season. But so I guess the other side of the coin is that, like you're talking about, they're reservoiring payroll for potentially, I think it'd be easy to look at this and say, maybe they're going to make a big splash. Maybe they really will go after Garrett Cole or Steven Strasburg or even Zach Wheeler, who's now into, it sounds like, commanding close to $100 million or more. Maybe they do chase after an Anthony Rendon to fill their third base need. I still don't think the Brewers are going to be involved on any of those true big ticket guys, but the more guys they let go, the more money they free up, the more you start to wonder, maybe David Stearns bucks his trend a little bit, sees that this year has potential with the core they have to take that next leap. Maybe he does do that and chases somebody that would be signed to a multi-year deal. Do you see any possibility that that's where this is headed?
I don't think for any of those guys that you just mentioned, you're talking $200 to $300 million contracts. And that doesn't really fit the Brewers' budget or market size. You know, as I just mentioned, they've got so many holes to fill, first base, third base, catcher, and starting pitching, that I think he'll go more for quantity than like this big – Like if you signed a Rendon or a Strasburg or even a Zach Wheeler, then what are you going to have left to fill all those other holes? You can't do it that way. I think he'll get some good players and some established players, but he's got 9 openings to fill. If you all of a sudden allocate $25 million next year to one of those openings, you have trouble filling the other 8. So I don't expect them to play at the top of the market, but I think they'll look at other things. And I mean, who the heck thought they would sign Grandal for $18.25 million last year? That flabbergasted everybody. So, they have so much to do. I think they're going to have – it's going to take, you know, all of the money they've saved to fill some of these holes. So I think Stearns will go more. And when I say quantity over quality, I don't mean – bottom of the talent quantity. I'm talking about good players, but they need a lot of them right now.
Grandal last year was a good example of sort of how this front office operates. These moves don't there isn't a lot of buildup. They just happened one day. And maybe Mike Moustakas, there was a lot of smoke around that, him coming back because he had been there the previous year in Milwaukee. But he frequently, David Stearns, will make moves that don't leak out anywhere until they're done. And I think we had another example of that earlier in the week of Thanksgiving when the Brewers made a trade with San Diego, pretty compelling one in that it involves major league talent, kind of going both ways. They send Zach Davies and Trent Grisham to San Diego in exchange for pitcher Eric Lauer and an infielder by the name of Luis Urias, who can play shortstop, it sounds like. He's also he's also capable at second base. The Brewers obviously have a second baseman at this point in Keston Hira, but thought that was interesting. It seems like Lauer and Davies are pretty comparable. One, Lauer's a lefty and Davies is a righty, but comparable in terms of what maybe production you could expect. So that's kind of an even exchange. Fascinating to see them get an infielder for a spot. The only spot that's really spoken for or seemingly spoken for aside from Hira would be shortstop and Orlando Arcia on the infield. But I'm curious what your takeaway is from that trade. Do you think Urias is a shortstop and how, I guess, how you look at that trade in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was one of those need-for-need trades, just a good baseball trade, two teams that needed specific parts and they were able to match up with them. It wasn't like one team was cost-cutting, the other team was cost-adding. It was just a baseball trade that both teams thought fit their current needs. You know, the Brewers did tender a contract to Arcia. A lot of people wondered if they would after acquiring Urias, but They did sign Arcia. Now, did they sign him to trade him? We'll find out. And will they throw shortstop open to a competition between Arcia and Urias? We'll find that out too. I don't think Urias is going to be the third baseman. I don't think, you know, that's their plan, to have Urias be the third baseman, Arcia be the shortstop, and Hira be the second baseman. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I don't think that's the intention. They love versatile players. And so, yeah, this might have been to light a fire under Arcia, or they may still move him and give Urias the chance to be the shortstop. So that's all stuff to be determined. I'm sure a lot of that's going to just depend on what they're able to do elsewhere on their roster. Then it'll all come together. Let me just throw out, nobody thought Mike Moustakas was going to be the opening day second baseman last year.
Yeah, I was going to compare it to that. Having Travis Shaw when he was still right and Mike Moustakas on the team when they acquired Moustakas in 2018, very unconventional to have essentially two guys who could play third base and really only third base only without some, you know, creativity there. That was sort of an eye-opening move, and maybe we have a similar thing here where Arcia makes now going to make more than $2 million a year. That's probably more than you want to be paying for a strict backup shortstop, which is why the idea that he might be traded, I think, has a lot of credence to it. But, you know, maybe they do find some way to mix all three guys in. And obviously, Hira isn't the soundest defensive second baseman yet at this point in his career. Maybe they sub him out later in games. It's not that Urias is an all-world defender, but probably more reliable over there than Keston Hira. It's interesting. I'm really curious to know what happens with Orlando Arcia, because he backslid a little bit this year. He's still young enough, and you heard when the Brewers hired an assistant, their new assistant hitting coach, that he even suspects there's as much talent in Orlando Arcia's bat as all-star caliber, which is quite the thing to say when Arcia has been one of the worst offensive players in baseball the last couple years. I have to think they're probably at the end of their rope with him, but I don't know. He's kind of one of the big mysteries left in this offseason, outside of the players they need to acquire, but he's an interesting case to me, Orlando Arcia.
He's 25, you know? He's 25. He's been in the big leagues over 3 years, and he's 25. Urias is 22. I think Hira is like 23. These are all young guys, so let's see what happens with them. You know, I keep asking them every time they do something, is Hira still the second baseman? And they keep saying yes. So let's see if that changes. You know, let's see if that changes. You know, would they slide Hira over to first base and then make Urias the second baseman and Arcia the shortstop? Let's see. You know, they say they're not doing that yet, but let's see. Everybody says, well, you know, Hira's too short to be a first baseman. Prince Fielder was like 5'9".
Yeah, and Eric Thames wasn't the tallest first baseman in the world either. And
so let's just see. You know, everything's subject to change in baseball. I will again say, Did anybody think Mike Moustakas was going to be the second baseman last year?
Yeah, he may have made himself more money by being versatile, you know, showing his versatility there at second base. I definitely... Well,
there's no question he did, JR, because the Reds, he's got to play second base for them. They got Eugenio Suarez at third and Votto at first. He's got to play second.
Yeah. I would definitely not rule out Kesson Hira sliding over to first. I know that they don't want to do that. It would diminish his offensive sort of value on the defensive spectrum. But
how about left fielder after next year?
Yeah, I don't know. Left field after next year is somebody that's going to be acquired from the outside of this organization. Because now, to the other part of that trade is Trent Grisham, who I would say figured fairly prominently in their opening day plans as at least a fourth outfielder and maybe even a starter if they wanted to try Ryan Braun at first base. Grisham now a member of the San Diego Padres. I feel a little bad for him because I think his legacy in Milwaukee will always now be tied to that error he made in the wild card game that allowed the go-ahead run to score in the eighth inning. And either he bottoms out in San Diego and that's the only thing Brewers fans remember him for, or he succeeds in San Diego and Brewers fans are complaining that they shouldn't have traded Trent Grisham, and it's a bad taste in their mouth all the way around. Grisham is a little bit of a mystery in that he was so good in the minors this year, didn't necessarily translate that all the way to the big leagues, didn't maybe show the power that we saw in the minor leagues, although he hit some big home runs. And with a hit tool like that, though, you got to think Trent Grisham's got a pretty lengthy major league career ahead of him still, right?
Well, you wish him well. You know, let's just take the narrative that they traded him because he made an error that cost them the wild card game. Let's just take that and throw that into the garbage can right now.
That has
nothing to do with it. Maybe it'll help him that he won't have to answer those questions from us next spring when he shows back up. Maybe that'll help him. But I think he was strong enough to move past that. I think he was talented enough to move past that. And that's not why he was traded.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's saying that out loud. That's insane. I'm sure a lot of people noticed he had he has value. You know, it's not because of one play. I know a lot of people thought Grandal was available because of his NLCS performance with the Dodgers in 2018. And if that's the case, then the Brewers got a heck of a deal because it is crazy to base everything on just a couple of outcomes. So moving chronologically from the Padres trade, Mike Moustakas, we've kind of already touched on him going to Cincinnati and how tough that is. I know people are really bummed out about this because he's leaving the Brewers, but that four-year deal for $63 million is almost what Yasmani Grandal is making, and nothing against Moose, who had a tremendous 2019 season with the Brewers, but you just don't, A, expect that power production is going to necessarily continue for the next several years of his career. B, he's kind of the type of guy that's, I don't want to call him replaceable, but you can find that production elsewhere. And C, I don't think the Brewers were ever going to pay 4 years, 60-some million to bring him back. Kind of felt like it was just a fait accompli that he was going to go somewhere else. And like you said, it stinks he's in the division, but I don't think that was actually ever going to happen as you look back on it.
That's true. That's true. And you know, can you blame him for taking top dollar on the market after two straight years of crickets?
Not at all. Total right move for him.
I mean, crickets, you know what? He had to swallow his pride and go back to Kansas City at what, like a $6 or $7 million contract 2 years ago? And then after he was traded to the Brewers and helped them make it almost to the World Series, he goes back out on the market and again nothing, and he has to come back and take another 1 year deal for $10 million. So this guy was ready to get a big offer and take it. And you have to feel happy for him. He's a great guy. Bad for the Brewers, tough to have to face him the next 4 years. But you know, they were not going to bid at that price to keep him.
Yeah, to me, though, the biggest loss by far, you know, with a massive gap between one and two, is still Yasmani Grandal. I think everybody else so far, like you said, not a stunner, not a shocker, not a loss that cannot be replaced. And so we'll look now at the guys that were released on Monday night, were not tendered contracts: Claudio Shaw, Nelson, and Guerra. I thought they might keep Travis Shaw, if only because they don't have any options at either corner right now, and it would seem nice to have that sort of depth and cash, or not cash in, but hope for a bounce back from him. I just wonder if the bat speed loss that we saw from Travis Shaw is just something that the Brewers don't think is ever coming back. And then the other surprise, I guess, is, well, either one of those pitchers, you could see them bringing them back, Claudio or Guerra. My guess is the Brewers just felt, you know, we can get that level of production for somebody who's younger, somebody who's cheaper, and they just made a pretty simple calculation that way. But I am surprised that they didn't try to give Travis Shaw one last shot. What do you think about that?
Well, they did, but at a reduced price.
Sure.
You know, they thought after having a lost year in 2019 that he might take a little less money, but at least have that guaranteed and come back. And it didn't work out. You know, I think they lost him mentally a little bit at the end of the season when he went down, did what he thought they asked of him in AAA, and then came back and didn't get to play. But you can't blame them for doing it that way, because Moustakas was playing great at third and Hira playing fantastic at second offensively. And so, you know, it just didn't work for Travis. It's unfortunate. He went down and he thought he did what he should have been able to do to get his job back, but the job just wasn't there anymore. And I think they lost him mentally a little bit after that. And I think he decided at that point he needed a fresh start somewhere else. Sometimes that is what's best for a player. And so I don't think he was in the mood to take a lower salary on tender day. I think the Brewers tried and he just decided not to do it. His agent told me, you know, that they just thought it was best to go get a change of scenery. I think they think there's a little bit of a gamble by Shaw, because suppose he doesn't get offered even what the Brewers' reduced offer was, but it sounds like he was willing to take that gamble. And so it's just unfortunate. He had two great years for the Brewers, two 30-plus home run years, had a really bad season that just changed everything. And so it's too bad. It really is too bad that that's the way it worked out, but I think Shaw was just ready to move on.
Yeah, one of the more head-scratching situations in Brewers history, to have a guy who was so productive for 2 years, contributed greatly to the team that went to the seventh game of the NLCS, and just plain old fell off a cliff last year, was going to be relied upon as one of the key members of that offense, and just lost it. Whatever he had, he lost. The Brewers still get pretty good value from that trade with the Red Sox where they sent Tyler Thornburg to Boston. Thornburg never got healthy with Boston, never able to contribute, so Travis Shaw essentially for free was a pretty good get by David Stearns. Unfortunate ending, though, to his story with the Brewers. It was an interesting day Monday on labor. I'm going to talk about the labor peace situation in a second, but on cutdown day, on tender day, there were a lot of pretty interesting guys released to the market, not just in Milwaukee, but, you know, a name like Blake Treinen with Oakland. He's another guy like Travis Shaw, who sort of was great, fell off a cliff a little bit, but is an interesting bounce back candidate. Elias Diaz, catcher for Pittsburgh, is a guy that I noticed, who I was sure would be back with Pittsburgh. So there are a lot of interesting guys out there. Anybody jump to mind, or any surprises that you noticed, particularly, I guess, as it relates to the Brewers, knowing what they're looking for and in the market for a lot of things here? I guess, did you have any other takeaways outside of what Milwaukee was doing on Monday night?
Well, I do think it shows you how tightly teams are running their budgets now, and how analytics have you know, change the way certain players are valued. You know, I have scouts tell me all the time that outside of Yelich and Trout and Bellinger, everybody stinks when you apply analytics to them, and therefore nobody wants to, the teams don't want to pay these guys. You know, that's a little harsh to say that, a little overstated, but there's a little bit of truth to it too, that, you know, they analyze guys 10 ways to Tuesday now, JR, and a lot of guys just don't measure up to what the, you know, projected salaries might be for them. It's certainly the gravy train. The gravy train is not operating with as many cars on it as there used to be in Major League Baseball. So, you know, but having said that, there's been some pretty good spending already this year on the market for the most, but it's been mostly, like, until Moustakas yesterday, it had mostly been catchers and relievers, you know, which are two highly sought after, commodities these days. So, I mean, a lot of guys were kicked out. So let's see if those teams were proven to be wrong by these players getting better deals elsewhere. Let's see how many guys do that. You know, I think it fell under a completely different category, but, you know, Addison Russell got cut loose you know, by the Cubs too. And, you know, his domestic violence stuff certainly had to be part of that. But this was a guy that a few years ago looked like he was their shortstop of the future, right? So things can change with him. It's a special case because of what I just said, it's not just on-field evaluation. So, you know, for Oakland to cut Trinan, you know, they must have thought he was in decline to do that. And, you know, the same with the Giants and Pilar. So there are a lot of guys out there. So there is some talent out there that wasn't out there, you know, the previous day. So let's see what happens now. You know, we've talked about all the holes that the Brewers have to fill. There's still plenty of guys out there that are worth signing.
It does tie into the overall labor peace situation. And right now, I think a lot of people feel like we're headed toward a work stoppage in 2022. It's different, though, than the past couple off seasons where the quote-unquote market took forever to start rewarding guys, the big-ticket free agents, and everything kind of got pushed back. Guys took one-year deals like Grandal, like Moustakas. I still think those are case studies that will sort of be brought up again as we head toward this, this flashpoint in 2022 when they got to try to come to labor peace again. But now it's different. It's the middle class guys who are being pushed aside. You know, the Brewers being a good example of guys who probably could contribute, did contribute to a playoff team, but the assumption here is that they could, you know, younger, cheaper alternatives could be found for just a slight drop off of the price, or I should say of the production. So as far as what you know about the labor peace situation, what players you've talked to or front office executives, whatever, what is your concern level with what's going to happen in 2022? Do you feel like we are headed for a surefire work stoppage, or there's still too much time to tell? Like, what is your temperature gauge on what's happening there?
Well, we've got drum beats on two different horizons right now that are impossible to ignore. The Players Association drum beats, and, you know, I think that their players are more irked than ever before at the way the salary structures have borne out. You know, for years, you paid your dues pre-arbitration and then did okay in arbitration and then made big money in free agency. But now, all of a sudden, it seems like that's been turned upside down. And by the time you get to free agency, you're just not valued like you used to be. So I do think the players are not happy with this, just the way the whole salary structure has been turned on its head. And then you've got the other drumbeats with the minor leagues. You know, there's all this contraction talk about minor league teams being contracted and the minor leagues being consolidated and some cities losing their teams and so on and so forth. So I think there's drumbeats on two different horizons right now that has people wondering where Major League Baseball is headed. You know, you've got the contract to be negotiated with all of the minor leagues and then the contract to be negotiated with the Players Association. So I think these next two or three years are going to be very, very turbulent for baseball, and people are just waiting to see how it all shakes out on both fronts.
Before I let you go, one last thought related specifically to the Brewers. Some chatter about Josh Hader being potentially available in the trade market. Ken Rosenthal wrote about it. He believes that the Brewers are, you know, quote-unquote listening on Josh Hader, as they do on everybody. David Stearns gave his customary quotes. Love the guy, but if you want to get anything out of him, you're barking up the wrong tree. The guy says nothing. Yeah. His quotes are nothing. Yeah. So you can't really draw any conclusions. Like I said earlier, when he makes moves, they're not whispered about. They just happen. And right. Credit to the seal he seems to have on the guys that are in his negotiating circle. But it's interesting because the Brewers just don't have a lot of trade chips. They don't have high-level minor leaguers that you would expect them that they would be willing to part with. They don't have a lot of guys, period, on their big league roster at this point. I think Hader might make some sense in that you could fetch a big return, potentially fill some of those holes. You do have Corey Knebel, Bobby Wall coming back. You could see a path where they could keep the relief situation mostly intact even without Hader. And you've got to kind of wonder to yourself, as we've wondered, I guess, all coming into last year too, can Josh Hader replicate what he's done to this point in his career? At some point, is he going to be dominant for you know, more than just one more year or two more years? I mean, it's really hard to say as a max effort guy like Josh Hader is. So you could see why that could be a possibility. I would suggest this is just Ken Rosenthal speculating. But what do you make of that? The idea that the Brewers might, you know, could consider moving on from Josh Hader. Do you think that is an avenue to solving some of the problems they have right now?
Well, I would caution that there's a big difference between listening on a player and shopping a player. You know, there's a big difference between those two. Are they listening on Hader? Probably. Are they shopping him? I highly doubt they're shopping him. You know, it would be malfeasance not to listen to what people might want to offer you for Hader, but it would be even bigger malfeasance to trade him for a package that is not overwhelming. You know, their farm system, because they have traded and called up so many players in recent years, their farm system is thin in the top 10 right now. And the Brewers, Baseball America's Brewers top 10 is going to be released tomorrow. I know because I did it for Baseball America. So keep an eye out for that on Wednesday. But so if you were offered three or four top 10 prospects for Hader, would you have to listen? Of course you'd have to listen. But I will say this about Josh Hader. He is one of one. There's no one else like him. Statistics bear that out. They have two very special players in Christian Yelich and Josh Hader. Very special players. And Hader's under control for four more years. Yelich for three more years. So that is not to be taken lightly, and I guarantee you, Stearns and company don't take that lightly. So, you know, the ever since the Godfather movie came out in the 70s, the phrase "making an offer you can't refuse" has probably become a little trite. And I don't, we're not talking about a horse's head in your bed.
Not yet. Who knows?
This is making literally an offer you can't refuse. What that might be, I don't know. I mean, the Brewers got Christian Yelich for four prospects. But I don't think the Marlins ever envisioned he was going to immediately become one of the top three players in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see it happening myself, but it is. I got to think it's an option on the table because the Brewers are going to have to get creative to fill some of these holes that we've been talking about. He is Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Read everything he has on the Milwaukee Brewers at jsonline.com. You can read about the non-tender situation. He's got a column that's going to be posting on some of the fallout, some of the takeaways from what's going on there. And obviously there were some moves to come. The winter meetings are a couple weeks away. Surely there's going to be some action for the Brewers and all 30 teams in Big League Baseball. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We'll chat with you again real soon.
Thanks, JR.